Hello everyone, and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where I, Rod Jones, content manager, and Kate Cooper, head of research policy and standards at the Institute, take a critical look at what's been happening in the world of leadership and management up to the 21st of September 2020. Hello, Kate.
Hello, Rod.
Well, our first story, Kate, looks at the COVID-19 experience of Next. Tracking the firm's 2020 performance up to the end of June, the bulletin from CEO Lord Wolfson reveals that sales during the COVID era have been resilient despite the related challenges. The pandemic has been expensive and miserable, Wolfson writes, but some good has come from the upheaval. We have learnt how we can work more effectively. He adds, by far the biggest problem with home working has been the lack of spontaneous conversations between colleagues. We have missed the chance conversations, unplanned questions, the ability to learn from colleagues, along with the training and camaraderie that the office provides. At its best, an office can be a cauldron for new ideas and enhanced collaboration. In short, Next has achieved crucial process innovations, boosted efficiencies, and sought valuable advice from the CEO of another firm, but still faces challenges with home working. Kate, what can leaders learn from this mixed summary of the brand's COVID-19 experience?
Well, I think Lord Wolfson's articulated it really well. There have been huge benefits to the accelerated switch to home working for so many people. And we keep hearing about how people are reluctant to return to the offices, not necessarily because they're worried about safety considerations. They don't want to commute. They're finding that they can work at home with fewer interruptions, fewer distractions. But people do like to get together, and that is a great way of generating ideas, understanding of what's going on in different parts of the organization. So we can't pretend that that isn't there. But I think by saying these are the problems, how are we going to get some spontaneous conversations going? How are we going to share information in a way that's informal as opposed to formal? They're part of the way to the solution. We've got to get good at home working. I can imagine when the telephone first came out, people were lamenting the fact that people would use the telephone instead of writing letters. But we adapted and we start getting good at things. So let's watch this space, because we've heard, haven't we, Rod, how many people are doing online activities, that there's been an increase in the number of online social events and meetings. People will adapt just as they did to home working and be good at it.
Indeed, Kate. And the stories that we've used in the podcast suggest that many people are adapting very well indeed.
Yes, they absolutely are.
Well, our next story is from Insight, and it's that many businesses plan to move to smaller but more focused offices in future. According to a new independent survey of over 500 senior business decision makers from Property Developers Accumulate Capital, almost two-fifths of decision makers said their business is planning to relocate to a smaller commercial space in the next year, and with there being less emphasis on employees working from the office, the same number are looking to relocate to a new location with cheaper rent. The majority, 58%, believe working from home will become more commonplace, while 45% of businesses do not see a situation where all their employees will be working in the office at the same time. However, most also say they value the office and will be more focused on its strengths as part of the shift, with 57% of businesses still relying on a physical workspace in order to network and collaborate with partners and prospective clients. Kate, can it really be the case that the days when a company would own or rent an office with a desk in it for every member of staff are coming to an end?
Yes, but that's not new, is it, Rod? We've had hot desking for a long time, and although a lot of people don't like it and got quite territorial about their so-called hot desk, it has been the case. And you and I have both worked in offices where people were sitting in canteens or sitting in the recreational area because there weren't enough desks. So that trend of not a desk each, I think, of course, will continue, but maybe the demands on the so-called hot desks will reduce because people will be less territorial. And actually, if you're only in the office 1 or 2 days a week, you don't need your space in the same way, because you can create a nice working environment at home, which is, I assume, why so many people want to stay at home. So offices are changing, but they've begun to change anyway, with more meeting spaces, more informal areas, more let's come together to collaborate, but the rest of the time let us work in different places, different locations. So it's an accelerated trend, and probably one that's going to save a lot of money for many companies in rents.
Thank you, Kate. Well, our next story is also from Insight, and it's on the value of investment in technology and also an investment in talent through COVID-19. For middle market and small businesses, the COVID-19 pandemic is highlighting the vital importance of investing in new technology, facilitating remote work, and also maintaining the tech-savvy workforce needed to make it all happen. According to a survey conducted by the Harris Poll for CIT Group Inc. The survey claims that most small and mid-sized businesses managed to stay open when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, but that often meant working in a limited capacity with reduced hours, offerings, or workforce, as safety concerns and lockdowns are likely among the factors preventing normal operations. Compared to a year ago, significantly more middle market businesses strongly agree that continuous technological investment is a business need, and that conviction is also strong in the small business community, where 81% agreed that technological investment is an ongoing business requirement. The resiliency and flexibility that technology can deliver to mid-sized and small businesses had been proven convincingly by the COVID-19 outbreak, said David Harnish, president of CIT's Commercial Finance Division. Kate, what can leaders learn from this survey about future readiness and the need to make technology and the people to support this technology fundamental to their thinking?
Well, sometimes we get these sort of items, don't we, Rod? And they really are stating the obvious. We have all understood, experienced firsthand, how important it is to get the technology right. But however well the video conferencing platform works, it is no good whatsoever if you don't have people on it saying interesting and useful things to each other. So both are important. I heard of a headhunting agency in the City of London who actually in February, pre-lockdown, sent everybody home on one Friday to have a practice to see if they all could work from home if they needed to. And they weren't worried there about the people. They were worried about getting the technology right so that everything didn't collapse. So being future ready absolutely means keep updating your technology, but never forget that if you don't have the talented people to populate your technology, you haven't got a business.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Kate. Our final story looks at research by the CIPD, Embedding New Ways of Working, that found that the benefits of working from home significantly outweigh the challenges, and that a large majority of employers are planning to introduce or expand the use of home working once the crisis is over. Peter Cheese, CIPD CEO, comments, employers have learned that, if supported and managed properly, home working can be as productive and innovative as office working, and we can give more opportunity for people to benefit from better work-life balance. This can also help with inclusion and how we can create positive work opportunities across our economies. But, he goes on, it doesn't suit everyone, and increasingly organisations will have to design working arrangements around people's choice and personal preferences over where and when they would like to work, whilst also meeting the needs of the business. Kate, would you agree with Peter Cheese that making the right to flexible working a day one right would support the uptake of a wider range of flexible working beyond home working?
Being able to demand, if you like, flexible working, to me, is an example as to how working conditions have improved over time. Working weeks have got shorter, paid holidays have got longer, The right to ask for flexible working has been there for a while. So all this is, in a way, it's a continued improvement for employees, of course, of their terms and conditions of employment. And we know, even before COVID, that the ability to work from home, to be able to work flexibly, was something that people really valued and would sacrifice quite a lot of salary in order to be able to do that. So it's not an unreasonable trajectory, if you like. Will it help organisations be more flexible in how they think about other things? Absolutely. Because you can't have an effective organisation where there are customer-facing roles that people cannot do from home, and then another sort of back office cadre of people who are able to work from home, because that would seem to be very different conditions of employment. So how we make work better for everybody and fairer for everybody seems to be the challenge. And I think that's what Peter Cheese is picking up on. Flexible working is a lot more than just working from home when you don't fancy the commute.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.